This is Carolyn Crabtree. I am at the McDowell House and Apothecary Shop with Alberta Monahan, the assistant director at the museum here. This is August the 24th, and it's 10:30. Hello, Alberta. I'm glad you're here to do this for us. And today, we're here to talk about the McDowell family, mostly, but I'd like to ask you a few questions first about how long have you been working here?
I've been here 25 years.
How did you become interested in the McDowell House?
Well, I was rather new to Danville and was looking for something else to do. I read in the Sunday Advocate there a little quip that said they were wanting docents at the McDowell House Museum. A new friend had brought me here on a tour, and I enjoyed it, and I decided to give it a try. Susan Nimitz was the director, and so I came and took the training and started, and so I've been here ever since.
Now, what did you do before you started this?
Well, my husband was a wildlife biologist. Okay. We lived all over the state in different areas. And I had been his secretary, but the one who took care of the paperwork for him when we had our office at home. And then when we moved to Western Kentucky to the office building there. I started that kind of work right out of high school, so it was something I thought I could do here. And of course, with the Western Kentucky, with the hunting area, there were always folks around and always making reservations for hunting. So I had some work doing that, and I felt like I could do this.
Well, have you enjoyed doing this? I'm sure you have.
Yes,
with as
I
many
have.
Years as you've been here.
Very, very much.
What is your favorite part of the job?
The people giving the tours. Like last week, a doctor came in from New York, a doctor and his wife. He had been to a medical seminar, and they had talked about the anniversary of Dr. McDowell. He told his wife, "We're going to Kentucky. We're going to see the house." So they came from New York to Danville just to see the house. And it was good to see him and his interest in the house.
Do you have a lot of doctors and their families who come by here?
Yes, quite a few. Often they don't tell us they're doctors, but when you get in the operating room and start telling the story, there's just a little glimmer or something that comes to their eyes, and I'll often say, "Is that right, doctor?" And they will agree with me. So we do, and we have people who have come from England, who have come from Scotland, who want to see the house because Ephraim studied there at their university.
Now, I understand you're quite an expert on the family history.
Well,
and I wanted to talk to you a little bit about that today.
I don't know expert, but I've enjoyed studying about them and not just leaving. There's always something new, it seems, you can find out about them. This part of history has always been my favorite time, and so I pick up any books that I can about them, and family members write us, and family members send us genealogies. So many people now with website and email write email, "Can you tell me how much kin I am to Ephraim McDowell?" So I just enjoy looking into that.
Who is your favorite family member besides Ephraim?
Adeline.
Now, who is she?
Adeline is the doctor's daughter.
Okay.
She married a young man who came from Tennessee to study at Central College, the They called it Central before they did Center.
Oh, is that wrong?
They met, and she wanted to get married. And her father, Ephraim, reminded her that he had told the girls if they married before 18, that he wouldn't give them any money. So they waited a year and married, and then they went to Nashville. He was a storekeeper. They had monetary problems, so they sold their furniture so that he could have the money to study law with some of the people in Nashville, and he became a lawyer.
What was his name?
James Dederick.
Okay.
There is a street in Nashville named Dederick Street for him. He became a Superior Court judge. And during the Civil War time, they had to go out. The wives and children were sent by the husbands out into the country to get away from the Yankees, and they were bothered more by the deserters from each side than they would have been by the Yankees in Nashville.
Was that at the time that the North controlled Nashville?
Yes, at that time. I have a diary she wrote about that, and in it she mentions that I am not a braggart. I have never told my children that one of their grandfathers was the first governor of Kentucky and that the other was a famous doctor.
Who was the first governor? Oh, Isaac Shelby,
yes,
of course.
Yes, Isaac Shelby.
Uh-huh.
I brag to my grandchildren all the time.
I try to. How many children did they have?
They had nine.
And what happened to
the oldest son, Shelby, named for his grandfather, was out in the barn and he ate some wheat, which young men and farmers often did, and he choked on that.
How old was he?
There's different stories on that. I have always heard from family members that he was just a child, but seeing records, I think he was closer to the teen years. Then two children died close together. We don't know why, but you know, they had diphtheria times and that it's just not mentioned what caused their death.
I know there was a cholera epidemic around 1833, but that would have been later. Than these people. Did the Shelbys come to visit here quite often, or do you know that?
That we don't know. I've often wondered. It wasn't too far, so they visited back and forth.
I know the story at Grayson's is that the night before he left to go to Lexington to be inaugurated as governor, he stayed there.
Yes.
And I've often wondered why he didn't stay here with the McDowells.
Yes.
When that happened. But tell us a little bit about his wife, Ephraim McDowell's wife.
Well, Sarah, we know, was well educated for a young lady of her time, and we have the pianoforte that the governor gave to her. There is a question whether he gave it to her before she and the doctor were married or if it was a wedding gift. So we're glad to have that. And that went down through Adeline's family. And so we received it from a great, 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 great.
Were there a lot of doctors? And I know there were a lot of politicians, like governors,
yes,
and things. Were there a lot of doctors that came in later generations that you're aware of?
Nephews, cousins. While he was practicing here, he had two nephews at one time who were apprentices to the doctor. one of them wanted to marry one of the daughters, and the doctor asked the daughter, and she didn't want to marry him. So at that time, fathers often told their daughters, you will marry this person. But he said, no, she didn't have to. So this nephew got very unhappy and left. Nephew James, who helped with the surgery on Jane Todd Crawford, the doctor was expecting so much of him, but he died of measles in the War of 1812.
Really?
And as I go through the genealogy list, I find a number of doctors and a number of Dr. Ephraims.
Did most of them, were they from Kentucky or were they from other states?
Kentucky and other states too.
What other state? Where did the other children end up?
William Wallace inherited Cambus Kenneth in Dr. McDowell's farm. Well, it was literally left half to him and half to Sarah. It belonged to Sarah as long as she didn't remarry. Then it would go back to William Wallace. But William Wallace very kindly went on a note for a friend, and the friend wasn't able to pay off the note, so he lost Kimba's can, and then he went on to Missouri. We have a portrait of his daughter upstairs. When she got old enough to be married, well, he sent her back to Kentucky to marry a Shelby, who was her grandmother's third cousin.
Who was that? Do you know? What was his name?
I don't remember which one of the Shelbys he was.
So how many of the children lived to be old enough to marry?
Just five.
Five out of?
One boy and four girls.
Really? Mm-hmm. Now, when the son lost Cambus Kenneth, of course, the mother did too?
She had died.
Oh, she had?
Yes.
Okay. Tell us about some of the things that are in the house that and how you've acquired those. Some specific things like portraits.
Well, the doctor's portrait was in Oklahoma. One of the doctors on the early board of McDowell House found that the portrait was there with a great-great-great-granddaughter. It was the Dust Bowl time, so he was able to buy the portrait for $4,000 from her at that time. I'm sure it was a great help to this family. We have often wondered and have tried to find if there was also a portrait of Sarah there too. This portrait done by the local artist, Davenport. We just imagine that Sarah would have had her portrait done too. But this doctor evidently wasn't interested in anything but the portrait of Dr. McDowell. Then we have a good portrait of Governor Shelby that a doctor in Harlan was able to help us get. We have the lamps, the whale oil lamps that belong to Governor Shelby. Of course, the pianoforte. We have some miniatures, a miniature of Dr. McDowell and a miniature of Sarah. We've had the one Sarah for a long time. The one of the doctor, a family member came in and I gave them a tour of the house, and when she left, she gave me this miniature. No one in the family had wanted it, so she brought it here to us. And miniatures were very popular. They put them on a chain like we do lockets, and men wore them too. It is said that George Washington wore a miniature of Martha.
I didn't know that.
And then And we have some medicine things that belong to the doctor, and just a number of things that belong to different family members. Of course, when this house was sold after the doctor died, they had a sale, and so a lot of things went other places.
Did mostly family members buy the things from the house?
That we don't know.
There's no inventory to show?
There's no inventory, no.
I've read about Isaac Shelby's granddaughter that went out west.
Yes.
Susan Shelby McGoffin, I believe her name was.
Yes.
Do you ever hear or do you have anything here that belonged to her? Or do you have
not
ever hear anything about?
No. I have hoped sometime to trace some of her kin, but I haven't been able to.
Well, I've been trying to do a little bit of that myself, and that's the reason I asked the question.
Yes.
To see if you had anything, because I believe that's who I'll probably speak about.
Yes. Uh-huh.
In November. But I noticed, now you said the portrait was by Henry Davenport.
Yes.
And he lived right across the corner here.
Yes.
In a tavern his mother ran. Do you believe he did these? Do you have any indication that he did these portraits for money or because they were neighbors or?
No, that I don't know. We have another of his portraits here of the young man who married his daughter, the oldest daughter, Susanna. And then we have a portrait in the other room of one of the Shelby girls, Letitia, that Davenport did. Their names are, his name is on the back of the portrait.
Really?
So we're sure about that.
Now, how did you come to receive the, excuse me, the medical instruments that he used? How long have you had those?
Since before I was here. And I am, inventory wasn't kept as nicely as Anna keeps it now. And often things were just written on a little scrap of paper. So many of the early things, we're not really sure where they came from, who gave them. So we don't know exactly who gave those to the house.
Now, Sarah Shelby McDowell was younger than her husband.
Yes.
How much younger?
He was 31, and she was 18
When they married. And I know you've heard the story, but tell us the story of her party that she had here and the results of that.
Well, there's a story that at one time she had a dance here, and then evidently it was a Saturday night. And then Sunday morning, when the young ladies went to church at the Presbyterian Church, they were asked to leave, that they wouldn't be a member of the church anymore because they went to a dance at the McDowell house on Saturday night. And that was very improper for ladies to do that at the time.
Now, Sarah McDowell had quite an influence on starting the Episcopal Church here, I believe.
Yes.
Do you believe that was probably the reason that she helped to begin that other church?
Well, I haven't dug into that. I have been interested in that. Evidently, the Shelbys, you should know more about this than I do, were Episcopalians, and Dr. McDowell, had started going with Sarah to Lexington to church. And so they needed a church here.
I didn't realize that. Now, the Shelbys, though, were quite involved in the Presbyterian Church here, weren't they?
That I don't know.
Okay. I thought he's also on the Board of Trustees for Center College, wasn't he?
Right. He was one of those who helped. start the college. And he had something to do with the deaf school too.
Really?
Yes.
Did, went out the window, the question that I wanted to ask. Just a minute, let me get my thoughts here. You triggered something and now it's gone.
I know that happens to
other
people.
Oh goodness, let me think. Well, it'll come back later. let's talk about where they're from, where they came from to America a little bit. The McDowells were from what country?
They came from Ireland. Of course, they originated in Scotland, and because of all of the troubles they had, they went to Ireland. Great-grandfather Ephraim was in a number of noted battles, and a brother of his came to Philadelphia, and then a year or so later, he sent notice to Ephraim to come. Ephraim's wife had died, so he came with his four children, and the children of his brother came to Philadelphia. And it said about this time, there were more McDowells in Pennsylvania than any other group of people.
Really?
After, I think, about 2 years, Ephraim was offered a chance to go to Virginia. There was a tract called the Borden Tract, and Mr. Borden wanted nine other families to go with him, and they received 1,000 acres of land. So Ephraim and three of his children went. One son had already established himself in Pennsylvania, so he stayed there. So they went, and they established a nice place to live. One story is that Ephraim helped build the first road in Rockcastle County, Virginia. He lived to be, there's different stories, 101 years, 102 years old, and he was about 7 feet tall, so that made him outstanding and well known. His son Samuel studied under a relative who was a lawyer, and that's where he got his lawyer training.
And he was the father of Ephraim.
Right.
Who was his wife?
Her name was Mary McClung, and it is written in the book McDowells in America that she was the prettiest woman in Virginia at that time.
Now, I wonder who made that decision.
I do too. I wonder.
I've seen that in other books where this woman was the prettiest woman in Kentucky at this time, things like that.
Well, Florence, the daughter I told you about coming back from Missouri to marry her cousin, her portrait is called Florence the Beautiful.
Oh, my.
Her portrait was in Michigan with a great, great, great. And in his will, he said, at his death, Florence goes back to Danville. So about 3 years ago, the portrait came to us.
Do you have any other stories that you feel are would be interesting to other people to know about, the McDowells or the Shelbys?
Well, I thought of Samuel McDowell coming to Danville, bringing his family. And that to me was all that came. I just read recently that Samuel, when he got ready to come to Kentucky, that he told his older children who were already married that they were coming too. He didn't give them any choice. But I was thinking of just that family. But now I've come to realize that he brought a lot of other people with him. I've been trying to find out for years who started the little town near Prestonsburg of McDowell. And I haven't been able to. I've corresponded with everybody of some importance that I could think of there, and nobody's ever answered my mail about this. And so others would have come too, and perhaps there was something about that area that they liked and stayed there rather than to come on to the bluegrass. And I found that when Samuel came to Kentucky, he had patents, they called them, or he had 7,000 acres of land in his name.
And in this area?
Yes, in Kentucky. This, some of the bluegrass, and some along the Ohio River the Augusta area. And we have a hard time with the genealogy there. It sort of stops when he gets there, and we can't help those folks there. So there was more land, you know, than I thought about that the McDowells would have settled at this time. So there were more in early Kentucky than just Samuel and his family. Samuel was able to get his sons jobs as commissioners and attorney generals and judges, and I found just recently that they call them the courthouse crowd. The name for them. And he, of course, was the president of the conventions that wrote the Commonwealth Constitution. I believe he was president 7 times of the 9 times they met. He is known to have believed that other people than the gentry should have a part in the government. And it was important to be elected to the job and not given it just because you owned a certain acres of land.
How did he happen to come here?
George Washington asked him to come. They fought in the Revolution together. They were in the House of Burgess together. And they needed somebody to come to help folks. People didn't know how to write deeds. They didn't know how to survey their land. Samuel knew how to do both to get this. People were coming over the mountains so fast. At the end of the French and Indian War, George the king had said that people from Virginia shouldn't cross the mountains. But as a little boy told me one time, he wasn't here. So the people came over the mountains, and so many of them weren't able to get their land settled right. They often lost it to people who would take it from them. They thought they owned the land, but they didn't. And so that was one of the things George Washington wanted Samuel to help with.
Do you know how they actually came into Kentucky? Did they come through the Gap, or did they come through up the Ohio River?
I haven't really found out about that, but I think they came through the Gap.
And it was just Samuel and his family that came to this area. But they settled in other parts of Kentucky. The other parts of the family settled in other places, or do you believe they all came here?
I think this is just my thoughts and reading about the land that he owned in other places, that perhaps this cousin stopped off here, and then this other cousin stopped off.
It was so early to bring your family here.
Yes.
Was a pretty courageous thing to do.
Yes, it was.
So he seemed pretty determined to stay, that he was going to stay here.
Yes.
From the beginning. Is
yes.
That right?
Right.
so he felt like it was going to be a permanent move. Why do you think Ephraim McDowell did not go back to Virginia to be a doctor after he studied medicine?
Well, perhaps Kentucky had taken hold of him too, and that he wanted to come back to this area to practice. Kentucky, Danville needed doctors badly, and to have someone with his education was a really good thing for this area.
I know there were other families who came here from that very same part of Virginia, Rockridge
yes.
County, who were very prominent people
yes.
in Danville. So Danville is unique in the way it grew and became very influential from the very beginning. The first courthouse, the first, you know, capital of the Kentucky district.
Yes.
What do you think was in these people that made them be able to accomplish this?
A desire to see the United States grow. Of course, it wasn't the United States. It was the different states, but to see it grow. I think Samuel had a deep interest in education, good government. He wanted the people to be able to run their own government, not to be subjected to the king and the things that somebody so far away who had no idea what the people needed. I think they believed in education for their young men, and maybe some for their daughters. And I think that they just saw, Virginia was already beginning to be crowded. And I read that already they were wearing out the farms mm-hmm. and that they needed more space. Many of the people always had to work for somebody else. And Samuel saw their desire to want something of my own. And so that they would come here and take that land grant, many of them 1,000 acres. I can imagine what it must have been like for somebody who had always worked for somebody else to come to have 1,000 acres to be able. And then in the early years, if you could get enough furs, enough way, if you could get another amount of money, a certain amount that was set at the time, you could get another 1,000 acres. So many people were able to have 2,000 acres, or maybe by somebody, some soldier who was given acreage and didn't want it, by his. And so those folks settled that. And then as their families came along, they divided. The oldest son marries, so he gets so many acres, and then the next son comes. And so the population grew fairly fast.
Well, I know that several of the men who came here were younger sons.
Yes.
And the entailment laws had affected them.
Yes.
Was Samuel McDowell an older son or a younger son?
He was an older son, and reading about him in our book, it said that he didn't accept all of his father's land. He divided it with his brother and his sisters.
Okay. So he did have a completely different attitude than most of these people did, it
yes.
seems. I've admired him very much as I read about him. He seemed to have a very good moral character,
right?
Religious, and so you know he loved his family, wanted them close by. Are these the same feelings you get of him, or do you see
yes.
him in a different way?
When he was 80 years old, he rode a horse to Nashville to a Presbyterian meeting, and at that time, most 80-year-old man would have stayed at home.
Well, Isaac Shelby evidently lived to an older age than most, is that right? You would think that all their war years and their experiences with the hardships of living on the frontier would have shortened their lifespan.
Right.
But it didn't seem to do that with these men.
They seemed to be very vital, interested in what was going on up until their very last days.
What about their wives? What do you think about their lifestyle here? What was it like for them?
Well, I think it must have been rather difficult. I think that Mary had been raised in a very nice home, and that whether she wanted to come or really didn't want to, I think of her telling some of her children, "What are your daddy and George Washington up to? That they're doing these meetings, you know, in the parlor with the door shut," and then finding out that she's coming here. But very soon, I want to make the frontier life last a long time. But it didn't really last very long. Very soon, they were getting furniture, china, crystal from Philadelphia and from England, and they had very nice homes very quickly. Some people here often tell us that this house is too elaborate for this period, but studying other things, I have found out that they got them. I don't know if the men promised their wives they would get this, or they just were able to do it and wanted to have them to have nice homes.
We think of these men as being wealthy in land, but not necessarily in money.
Right.
What do you think about this? I mean, were they wealthy in money as well?
Wealthy, or maybe well-to-do, able to get education for their sons, able to have nice homes.
No, David Burney was here early.
Yes.
He was a trader, a merchant here, who brought things from Pennsylvania to this area very, very early. And I had read that he was considered the wealthiest man this side of the Green River.
Yes.
So it seems to me there was a lot of other influence here that could have served the people here to have built homes like this.
Yes.
And it's not far-fetched to me, but it seems so different from Harrodsburg and some of these other places close by, Stamford. Why didn't they develop in the same way, it seems, as Danville did? What do you think was the difference?
I have never thought along that line.
It just seems to me that Danville is unique.
Well, it is.
And I've wondered what makes it unique. I'm interested in hearing what you think makes it unique. Is it Center College?
Yes, I think that Center College, because we have a portrait here of a niece of Dr. McDowell's, and she married Michael Sullivan from what is now Columbus, Ohio, and she met him. He was attending Central College, so she married and went with him. So other people came in. It would have been a drawing point for men to send their sons to Danville for their college work, to get their early training. And these young men studied Greek and Latin and early Greek history and things of that thing when they went. Many of them, their sons here in Danville were able to send to Europe for a year to study there. And when Dr. McDowell was studying in Scotland at the university, I have read that during the summer, one summer he was there, he went to the continent and traveled there. We have scales that he is supposed to have bought in Venice. His father wrote him a letter and told him to be careful with money, but to bring home good tools and good books. Oh. And wanted to know if he were going to church.
Now, there were several girls' schools in the area as well.
Yes.
Where do you think the McDowell girls were educated?
That I haven't been able to find out. And all my studying and reading, I haven't found out. We have a book a granddaughter wrote, but she doesn't mention that in any way, how the girls would have studied. Mostly she's talking about her grandfather. She tells about being up in the children's bedroom, looking out and seeing her grandmother's garden that was laid out in the circle and the cross. So we have the garden laid out that way now. And that her grandfather didn't imbibe very often, but when he did, he wanted cherry bounce.
Okay.
So we have some cherry
bounce.
Tell
us what that is. Uh-huh. What is cherry bounce?
It is made from bourbon or an early whiskey, sweet cherries, sour cherries, and brown sugar. And it sits for a while. You have to stir and strain, and it's got a pretty red color to it.
Where do you think, did they make their own whiskey here?
Yes.
Or was it Elijah Craig's job?
Just recently I read that people like the McDowells and the other important people in the area, the Henry Clay family, they each had a little type of distillery and that they made their own
whiskey. You often think about them using that for medicinal purposes,
right,
more than anything else.
Uh-huh.
Where did Dr. McDowell get his medicines? Did he make them himself, or?
He made many of the medicines, and then about 1815, we started getting what are the patent medicines from England. So he would have ordered some things from Philadelphia.
Tools and things he used, did he get those in Scotland or did he buy them here somewhere in America?
He brought some from Scotland. His father told him to bring some. And then we believe he brought the scales from Venice, so he probably could get some there. The portrait we have has pictures of books that he brought back from Scotland with him. And then he would have been able to order from Philadelphia to get other things that he needed.
I know there was also a newspaper very early in Danville, Kentucky Gazette first, I believe.
Yes.
Do you ever see any references to him? Have you ever looked to see if there are any references to him in any of these early newspapers?
No, I haven't. That's one thing on my list that I just haven't gotten around to.
But, since you're not very busy.
And I've always wondered, did he buy medicines from the Shankers? This close, would he have bought medicines from them? And that's what I planned to go to Shankertown, to get into their records, to see if perhaps he bought medicines from them.
They do have quite a few records out there, but I think most of their records have been transferred to Filson Club over in Louisville.
Yes. So
I've been wanting to go over there too. Maybe we can go together sometime.
Yes, that would be interesting.
Well, I was trying to think of some other directions here. I want to get your brain on this tape as much as possible. When you do your tours, they're wonderful.
Well,
you do wonderful tours. When you do these tours, do things in the rooms trigger things in your mind, and that you have all these wonderful stories you tell? Tell us some of the things that you talk about when you do your tours.
Well, usually by the second room, you can get the feel of what the people are interested in. And so you can reach back for those stories that are beyond the basics of what is in the room and fit it to your group. You learn to do that. Each one of us who tell the story of the house have our own little favorite things that we always like to tell. And we try to, you know, get the basic facts, and then some of the little stories, like I just told you about Cherry Bounce, and other things that would be, you know, about the family there. Upstairs, we have a trunk that belonged to Jefferson Davis. I like to mention that. Of course, Jefferson Davis went to school in Springfield, and then he went to Transylvania.
He went to school in Springfield, Kentucky?
In Springfield, Kentucky. There was a school taught for young men at what is behind what is the St. Rose Catholic Church. So, of course, the Davises moved to Mississippi, but Mr. Davis sent his son back to Kentucky to study there. So Davis got an early classical teaching there.
Were they Catholics?
No, they were Baptist. And Mr. Davis was chastised for sending his son to a Catholic school, but he said that if he hadn't taught him enough Baptist by now, why the other faith could have him. That's a story that comes through all of my studying when I lived in Springfield. That school isn't there anymore. They just were not able to keep it, and there wasn't money to fix it for something. But St. Rose Church is definitely still there.
Is that that beautiful church down there behind St. Catherine's?
Yes,
you
behind
can see
St.
in the
Catherine's.
Distance.
Yes.
That's a beautiful building.
Yes.
I notice a lot of people, though, members of the Cowell family.
Yes.
Members of the Wycliffe family that were from Bargetown.
Yes.
Their children went to Catholic schools.
Yes.
Some of the family were Catholics, but not very many, it seems. They were Presbyterians as well.
St. Catherine's started in 1823, a girls' school. My great-grandmother attended that school when it was a girls' school there. And they sent their small daughters, you know, there. It's hard for me to think about letting my daughter leave home at 9 or 10 years old and going to a school, but if they got an education, sometimes that's what they had to do.
Well, that's why I've often wondered about the girls of the McDowells and
yes.
the Shelbys, if they didn't mm-hmm. go somewhere like that, or Lexington, or so. I've been doing a little research trying to find out.
Oh, and they had tutors mm-hmm. that came and lived with them. One early Kentucky family, a man came who was studying history, writing books, and so he needed a place to live. So he lived with the family, and then he taught their children. So they were better educated than most other families.
We usually traditionally have children go to school for 12 years. How many years do you think these girls and boys would have studied?
Oh, if they had gotten close to what we call an eighth grade education, I think that they would have been considered well educated. Now, the sons in the South got to go study in Europe, but the girls didn't.
Well, I noticed that some of the people who attended Center College were very, very young, really.
Yes.
Now, their education was apparently oriented toward ministers, training ministers.
Yes.
Am I right about that?
I think that was the way it was leading, but now the Sullivans came to study, but they didn't become ministers. I think they became lawyers.
Were there very many McDowell descendants who attended Center College, or do you know?
That I don't know.
And most of them were either lawyers or doctors, mm-hmm. those kind of people. But the girls seemed to marry ministers, if I'm not mistaken,
yes.
because they came here to study.
Yes.
The Greens and people like that, weren't they connected in with the McDowell family?
Oh, I haven't found in my checking, I haven't found that name, but
okay.
they were early family. The quilt that was brought back to us this summer, and that was from the Caldwell family, and one of the Caldwells married Dr. McDowell's cousin. So,
okay, so they were connected in with them.
Two important families intermarried.
How do you keep up the artifacts here? How do you take care of them so that they, is there quite a bit of money used from the McDowell Foundation just to keep the artifacts in good condition here?
Well, we just do the natural things of taking care, and we have a good inventory of the things we have. We have the tours. We do not rent out catering for weddings, bridal receptions, other things like that, because we don't want too many people in the house at one time. And we always like to have somebody in the room at all times to watch. There have been some small things that have been stolen. During one big tour, somebody took the original key out of the front door, and we're able to get away with that. And so you watch carefully. Just recently at Liberty Hall, at some sort of reception, someone stole two miniatures.
Oh, really?
And that's a $50,000 loss for them. So we watch carefully. We do the regular cleaning there, and everyone is always careful. We try to keep people behind the ropes. Once in a while, you have a difficult time. Somebody wants to go and punch and touch, and that we are supposed, if there's something we need to pick up, we're supposed to put on gloves before we touch anything.
You have quite a few children's things in the house.
Yes.
I know. What is the reaction of children to the tour?
Well, it is surprising how exciting so many people, the children, get about the house. And we have less trouble with children than we do older folk. We tell the children, you know, please stand here and don't touch. And they watch each other. Somebody looks like they're going to touch, but it's difficult sometimes to get the older folks to stand behind, and they just go. One lady said, I got to touch that quilt. I just have to touch it. And that, we put a little sign on each of the beds, which I don't like, but we had to put, please don't touch, to keep them from touching the quilts. So it is just daily care and daily watching. When we're having like our Christmas open house thing, some small things that are around, we put away. That the spoons, the coin silver spoons, some of the dishes that belong to the McDowells, and we just put those away for that time. Mm-hmm.
The books you mentioned earlier, do you still have some of the books that Dr. McDowell had?
No, we don't know exactly what happened to those books. Now, we do have a lot of books of the period, as we say. We have Sir Walter Scott books. Sir Walter Scott was studying at the university at the same time that Dr. McDowell was. So we can think of him knowing Sir Walter Scott and being interested in his poetry. We have a violin or a fiddle that Dr. McDowell was supposed to have played the fiddle. And one story is that he liked to entertain his company by playing the Scottish reels that he learned when he was studying in Scotland.
Well, when Heather was, I mean, Holly was doing her play.
Yes.
We talked about the fact that this surgery happened on Christmas, at Christmas time.
Yes.
But at that particular time, they didn't celebrate Christmas the same way we do now, because there was no Santa Claus, that sort of thing. How did they celebrate certain, holidays?
You know, that in other things that I have read, and I wonder if the writer really knew how they did. I read from a New England book that said that they would have had cookies, and they would make a little Christmas tree out of feathers, and if they decorated a tree, it would have had cookies on it. I think they might have had a family meal. And we know that they were having church the Sunday morning, the Christmas morning that Dr. McDowell did the surgery, because he sent someone there to ask them to pray for him and his patient. So they would probably had a Christmas morning church service for people who lived in a town who could get to church. But the Santa Claus bit that we have now, and I don't know when Christmas stockings started. So whether there would, I've wondered if for the surgery they sent the children to the Shelbys so the house would be quiet, or whether they were just put off in one room and told to be quiet.
So the children actually were still living here when that surgery
yes.
was done. What about the 4th of July? Do you ever read anything about how they celebrated that, since
well,
that was such an important?
They often gathered people together, and they would get out and shoot guns and maybe have a parade of old soldiers. They did that.
I realize since Samuel McDowell was in the Revolution, that would have been a pretty important day for them,
yes.
I would think.
Yes, he would have, because he helped very much so. He was one of Washington's aides. of one Irvin McDowell, who was of the same family, became a very important general in the Civil War. He was very much involved in the Battle of Bull Run. So McDowells were, and part of them were in the South Carolina, and some of them were with Isaac Shelby in the battle that he is famous for.
Down at King's Mountain.
Yes.
Now, where did Dr. and Mrs. McDowell get married? Did they get married at the Shelby home?
We think so. We believe that they lived in the brick part of the house, and then they built this part of the house between 1802 and 1804.
For the McDowell house here.
We have records that show it took 2 years to build the house, and we have the bill of sale for all the lumber and the building of the house.
So when did they start building it?
Between 1802.
Okay.
And finished it in 1804.
Now the brick part, are you talking about the apothecary shop?
Dining room and the kitchen, the operating room upstairs.
Oh, okay.
Now the apothecary shop was a small shop that Dr. McDowell and Dr. Rankin started practicing 1795. Now I don't know whether that was a building that was already here or if they built it there.
Now Dr. J.J. Polk had an office somewhere in Danville before he went to Perryville. Do you have any idea if he was connected with Dr. McDowell in any way?
No, I don't. Dr. Rankin sold his part of the business to Dr. McDowell and moved to Texas. And then Dr. McDowell had several other partners, and I haven't kept up with their names. The post office was also in the apothecary shop for a while, and Dr. McDowell was the third or fourth postmaster.
Really?
For a time.
Okay, so this little building that is over at Constitution Square that they found was the first post office.
Yes.
After that one was
founded? I haven't been able to put that together. Just records show that he is, and then those people who knew about the apothecary said that the post office was there for a while.
Wow. You may shake things up in Danville if you studied that a little bit more.
yes. Of course, many of these stories have been told to me.
Uh-huh.
They've been come down through family history.
Tradition.
Mr. Grider knew so much about the apothecary shop, and he told me stories about that.
That's interesting. I also wanted to ask you a little bit about, there are a lot of free blacks who have lived in this area for many, many generations.
Yes.
But I also know that, didn't Dr. McDowell have slaves who lived
here? At one time, he had 17 slaves.
Dr. McDowell did.
Yes.
What about Samuel?
That I don't know.
Okay. Where did they live?
I wondered that too. After he got Canvas Kenneth, of course, part of them would have lived there. I would have imagined that there was a cook, and probably Mrs. McDowell had a maid, somebody to take care of the children. Dr. McDowell would have had somebody to take care of his horse, somebody for the garden. And see, this land actually went farther back than it is now. Dr. McDowell owned more. So there could have been cabins back there.
Okay. Did he free his slaves at any time?
No.
Or he kept them?
He gave his daughters slaves when they married.
Okay. Do you have any idea if his slaves were educated or anything like that?
That, I know. Okay. Nothing about.
Because I know that across the street, Robert Craddock had what is Grayson's Tavern.
Yes.
And his slaves were educated
yes.
people. And he gave actually his slave, one of his slaves, land over there.
The family Bible is in UK, in the library there. But we have copies of the family records. And in those records, Dr. McDowell lists the slaves that were born while they lived here. So the family of slaves was rather large.
Do you know what the names would have been of some of those slaves? I mean, when they were later on, would they have been McDowell's?
Local, it's just a first name mentioned.
Okay.
There's no last name mentioned.
Well, I think we've covered quite a bit. You've done a wonderful job. And I appreciate so much what you do here.
Well, I have thoroughly enjoyed it. It's just been so interested in knowing more of the history, and you keep finding it out. It's not something that's
like.
Just this is that. It's a dead end. You know everything about it you possibly can know, but it seems like every day you can find out something different.
I'm amazed at how interactive the history is of the families here.
Yes.
I'll start studying one family, and all of a sudden run into this one that I've studied before and didn't realize they were connected.
Yes.
But there were so few people living here in the beginning. I guess the children married each other, you know.
There is a letter from one of the governor's granddaughters. It's also with the collection in Lexington. And she is writing, she's being so excited because we're having roads. Well, you wouldn't think about a teenage girl being interested in a new road, a new highway. But she is saying, now we won't have to marry our cousins.
Our perspective of things is so different now
yes.
than it was back then.
Uh-huh.
So it's interesting. I love the history.
Oh, I do too.
Have you always been interested in history?
Yes. There was a lot of history around Springfield.
Well, thank you so much for doing this today.
Welcome.
I appreciate it. I'm not going to try to wear you completely out, but I may come back and other direction with this
yes,
if you'll allow me.
More digging.
Thank you very much.
Okay.